Hey mamas, I'm Alyssa, registered dietitian, picky eating specialist, and mama of two. You're listening to the Nutrition for Littles podcast, aimed at helping you raise healthy, independent eaters. Each week, we will tackle topics like picky eating, mealtime struggles, baby-led weaning, and so much more. Let's jump right into today's topic. Hey, 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 and welcome back to today's podcast episode. I'm going to dive into three things that I see parents expect their kids to be able to do that picky eaters especially, but kids in general, simply can't do. And I think this is a really important topic because oftentimes what will happen is the parents have an expectation of the child that is simply unrealistic. Yet the parent doesn't know that that's an unrealistic ask of the child and then gets frustrated when they're not able to fulfill the request or the expectation. And the child then starts to get really dysregulated. They want to please the parent. They want to help and do the right thing or complete the task, but then they feel like they can't and they feel like a failure. They completely spiral. Either they act out, throw up a tantrum, or end up like shutting down, which really obviously creates more and more stress at the dinner table. You all know that if you've been listening for literally even 30 minutes of this podcast, you know that pressure is not the way to get kids to eat. And while this doesn't feel like pressure because the parent doesn't understand that they are truly not capable of doing the task or completing whatever it is that they ask. So the parent thinks this is a reasonable request. The kid isn't able to articulate, hey, mom and dad, that is too much of you to ask of me. I am simply not able to do that. So then they shut down or spiral or tantrum. And the parent simply thinks, well, I'm asking a reasonable thing. And then they're not complying with me. So they're being disrespectful. They're being disobedient. They're having bad behavior. They're being super picky, blah, 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 blah. When they're actually not realizing the problem isn't that the child is being disrespectful or not following direction. But in fact, the child actually simply cannot complete the request because it's asking too much of them. The expectations are too high. A really good example of this, and then we're going to get into some specific things, but a good example of this is a parent might see their kid eat something at a birthday party or even on a random day, like let's say green beans. And then 2 weeks later, a month later, a year later, they'll serve green beans and expect the child to be able to remember that they like this food, what this food is, what it tastes like, how whether or not they ate it, if they did eat it, if they did like it, remember those things and then eat it again. And so parents get really frustrated. And I feel this way too. I'm like, I just watched you eat green beans. You like this. Remember, you just ate it yesterday. Eat it again. But what we don't realize is the brain is not formulated the same way an adult's brain is formulated yet. They're still on that trajectory. And so the expectation we have of them is if you ate this once, then you'll eat it again. When in reality, this is all like a learning mechanism of how to kind of build the infrastructure or build the scaffolding, if you will, to brain development and to understanding, you know, recognition of foods and preferences of foods. And it's going to take more than one time. So we'll see them eat it one time. We'll expect them be able to eat it another time when in reality, that expectation is outside of their wheelhouse, outside of their capability. Then we'll say something oftentimes like, why won't you eat this? You liked it last time. You ate it last week. You remember you had this already. And they shut down or tantrum. And the parent gets frustrated because they feel like they're making a reasonable request. They're using all this logic when in reality, it actually starts to kind of spiral the child. So I want to get into three specific things, although that was a pretty specific one, but I just know that I see that all the time. But three kind of more things that I see this happening to between child and adult, so that if you're causing these situations unknowingly, again, it is you're not trying to ask too much of them, that it could be something that you reevaluate. All right, the first one that I want to dive into is something that came up recently actually on a call with a client who was working through their child not being able to eat away from home or, you know, in a family situation, but also really struggling with their schedule as well. And the biggest one here is that parents expect kids to be able to anticipate hunger and fill up their belly even beyond fullness so that they will last or not get hungry again later when it's an inconvenient time. So children actually cannot understand the way that time moves and the way that their body moves through time. So as an adult, I can be stepping into a meeting and I haven't had lunch yet. And I know, even though I'm not hungry right now, this meeting is going to be an hour and a half long. I should eat a snack now so that I'm not hungry during the meeting. And then I zone out and don't make any sense, have brain fog, get tired, whatever it might be. I can eat now in anticipation of being hungry later. Children can't do that. So sometimes parents will expect the child to do that. And it comes crashing down because when they don't fill up their belly or when they don't eat even past fullness or even eat at all because they're not hungry, we get stressed and we have this like nagging thought in the back of our brain going, if they don't eat this now, if they don't take a few more bites, if they don't fill up all the way, I'm going to deal with a hangry meltdown tantrum in the middle of the school play or in the middle of church or in the middle of grandma's birthday celebration, whatever it might be. And we really value or desire to be good planners, to set our kids up for success, to set our family up for success, to set us up for success, that we're not dealing with the outcome of our child not eating. But this is simply just an expectation barrier that parents have too high of expectations for kids to understand anticipatory hunger before they're developmentally able to do that. And that is not clear in the research of that specific skill, but somewhere around the age of 10 is when kids are actually able to understand how their body moves through time, how their needs develop over time, and kind of the future and how we are living into it and how time moves. Somewhere around the age of 10. That's not a guaranteed science. It's certainly not something that's been exactly studied. And every child truly is different. But they might just be careful because you might think, well, my kid is really advanced. They're 4 years old, but they totally understand this process. And while that might be true to some degree, some kids certainly understand time quicker than others. It's also true that sometimes kids agree or say the right thing to please you, but don't actually understand how to articulate it or how to make the right choice in that moment to support something like hunger. So I understand that it is frustrating, but like, for example, we are not early risers in our family, which is great. I love this about us. I love that our kids are not up at 4:59 every morning or anything like that. But what that does before we go to school is create kind of a time crunch of like, hey, this is when you can eat your breakfast. But if our kids wake up not hungry for breakfast, but I want them to eat so that they're not hungry during school time, it's really hard to explain to our children at their current ages. And so my expectations are simply too high. And that, of course, you can kind of see how that starts to create a power struggle, how that creates frustration, worry for us, anxiety for us, and we're already kind of living into the future of what it's going to be like for them not to eat. Well, they're sitting there like, I'm not hungry. Why would I eat? Right? It's very confusing to them. So of course, the biggest solution to this, A, is have awareness around what you're expecting your kid to be able to do. They can't quite yet grasp. Now, that doesn't mean don't teach them and don't continue to talk them through this and don't have conversations about this, especially as they get older, like 5, 6 plus. But it does mean that you have to have your expectations in check, because when you don't have your expectations in check, that's where things start to spiral out of control. You get more frustrated, you get more angry, they double down, resist even harder. This is like a perfect time for them to dig their heels in. So of course, have realistic expectations. But the other thing with this is you might need to adjust your meal and snack schedule, even if it is like an off day. And that's totally fine to have some flexibility there, of course, because that's what life is flexible all of the time. The second thing that are potentially a too high of expectations that parents put on their kid without even realizing it that causes some of this picky eating spiral to kind of come to fruition is we expect our kids to be able to compare foods easily. And sometimes this isn't even something we're articulating. In fact, oftentimes it's not. But we don't even realize as parents, as adults, that we are constantly comparing situations. I'm able to go to a totally new country with completely new food or a new environment or whatever it might be. I can even imagine myself in these scenarios being able to look down at food I've never seen before and kind of predict and compare to food that I have eaten before. This, again, is a skill that doesn't come along till much older, like 8 to 10 years old or higher. And yet oftentimes, especially with toddlers, we may not recognize that that's what we're expecting them to do, but we might put something on their plate like raspberries that we feel like are very familiar and recognize that, well, these are close enough to strawberries. They love strawberries. This is close enough, you know, to any red type of fruit, but they're not actually able to draw those comparisons in order to try something new. So our steps need to be a little bit slower for them. But I really want to bring this to our attention because as adults, we have like this Rolodex, if you're old enough to know what that is, Rolodex of information around all the food that we've had in our life. And we can draw those comparisons and start to anticipate or predict what food will taste like, even though it's new to us. Or for example, we've had like a different variety of that food. For example, purple carrots. Okay, I've had carrots before, so I can assume I know what purple carrots taste like. Kids aren't able to do this, especially not as readily as adults can. And it's oftentimes not even something talked about. It's just assumed that they're able to predict, compare, and draw comparisons to try new foods, when actually they're not able to do that skill yet. So we can step in and help them with that, certainly. But it is important for us to be understand what the expectations are and how we're holding them to a standard that they're not actually able to meet. And then them not being able to meet that standard makes most kids either shut down, dig their heels in, tantrum, spiral, or maybe they do eat, but they're really, really deeply uncomfortable and they kind of hit the expectation for today, but it takes all of their will, all of their might to do that. And then they're not able to replicate that or they're off for the rest of the day. So there's a lot of kind of outpouring of that, of us having too high of expectations. Okay, the third one is also really important, actually recently came up on a one-on-one call, is that they're not able to articulate their hunger or their fullness. Now, this is something, of course, a skill that we can teach them over time. But this is something I hear from parents all the time. Well, they didn't eat enough. I'm sure they're still hungry. No way that that's enough food. She needs to eat more. She needs to fill her belly, all these things. And it's coming from a place of us thinking that we have any idea how hungry or full they are. And what's so crazy about these ages is that they're growing like crazy, but they don't grow consistently. They grow with these like stair steps in mind or these curves in mind where they'll go through a big growth spurt and then slow down. And so we can't know by looking on the outside what's happening on the inside, how they're metabolizing food, how much they need, how little they need, protein, carbs, fat, in all those different ways. So we really need to encourage and empower them to be able to understand their own body. But oftentimes parents unknowingly expect them to either be able to articulate hunger, articulate fullness, or even like make it believable. So a lot of times parents will watch their kid only take a bite or two of food and assume that of course they're still hungry, either because we're comparing it to ourselves, like there's no way that that would fill me up, or we're worried again about that future problem of hangry meltdown tantrum that may or may not come because they haven't eaten enough. So we oftentimes think or say that they're hungrier than they are because we actually don't know. And that's kind of hard for most parents to believe. It was hard for me. Absolutely. I feel like I know my kid inside and out, but at the same time, I actually do not know how hungry they are. So it's important for us to understand that we don't know that, and they're not able to articulate hunger or fullness well. And even if you have a child who comes to you and says, "Hey, mom, I'm hungry. Can you get me a snack?" Oftentimes by the time that they're feeling the signs of hunger enough to articulate it to you, it's actually past the window of where they should be eating. It's kind of like sleep. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but if you wait too long to go to sleep, like, okay, for me, for example, I'll sit with my kids and to fall asleep and I will get so drowsy and so sleepy. And this is like 8:30, you know, 8:15, somewhere around there. And I'm like, man, I could crawl into bed and go to sleep right now, or like 9 o'clock, you know, somewhere around there. But then if I stay up later than that, which I do, by the way, I get this like what I call a second wind. This is actually really interesting. I had my friend Jessica Burke on the podcast. You can scroll back and listen to that. She talked about the second wind is essentially a cortisol spike that your body gives you when you miss your sleepy window. When you miss your sleepy window, a cortisol spike comes in, both for kids and adults, that it takes about 90 minutes to fully get out of the system. So if you've ever experienced that second wind for yourself, where now I'm not tired till almost 11 again when I get sleepy, and the cycle starts over and over again, it's similar with hunger. There are certain windows and timeframes where we are starting to get hungry, feeling the need for food. And then all of a sudden we are too hungry. And that too hungry puts us in a state where we are like closer to fight or flight. We are surviving. We are eating only what we know. It's a really hard environment to learn how to like new foods in. So we really want to push that window of eating to a place of hungry enough, but not overly hungry. And what ends up happening is even if our kids are able to articulate hunger and ask for a snack, we've oftentimes missed that window of ideal time to feed them when they're hungry, but not too hungry and still able to learn a new skill, which eating for them and comparing foods like we just talked about is a new skill. So we really want to make sure we're hitting that window appropriately. And when parents either expect or wait for their kids to say that they're hungry, or expect their kids to be able to tell how hungry they are, how full they are, and all of those things, or we assume hunger and fullness for them, it puts us in this kind of dynamic where we're overstepping our, we're like out of our lane, essentially. We're doing things for our kids that they should be doing for themselves. And then they're out of their lane by having to come to us and say that they're hungry, where now we've missed this window of opportunity, which can cause a lot of frustration and stress amongst not only your life and the way that you want to plan your life, but also your child's body, and then also your parent-child dynamic. So it really puts us in a situation where we're deeply uncomfortable and frustrated with the entire environment. And this is like the perfect storm for a power struggle to ensue, for them to dig in their heels, to be frustrated. And so I think, kind of looking back at all three things we talked about today, the expectation that we have when it's too high, unknowingly, right? And I, listen, I'm a big advocate for having high expectations for your kids. I'm not lowering the bar so that they can do less and get away with more. I want to have high expectations for my kids. I want them to be, you know, focused and driven and capable and fearless and resilient. I want all of those things for them. But when we have expectations that are far beyond their reach, we set up the environment for us to be frustrated, us to be let down, or the perfect environment for us to start using pressure tactics like bribing, begging, pleading, guilting, nagging, praising, all of those things, because we want them to meet our expectation. And we think that they're just being disrespectful. We think this is a behavioral thing when it's actually a brain thing. Their brain is simply just not developed enough to meet these expectations, and we're asking too much of them. Not to say that we shouldn't ask things of them, but we're asking too much of them, which creates a bad environment for us. It also creates a really bad environment for them. It kills their confidence. And if there's one thing that picky eaters need, is confidence, especially at the table. It kills their confidence when we ask too much of them and they're not able to meet those needs. It puts them in a fight or flight situation. It makes them either praise, like get to the place where they're being praised because they're doing it for people pleasing reasons and to make mom and dad happy and not to be in trouble, or they double down, dig in their heels, and get pickier and pickier, which is creating the perfect environment for picky eating to get worse instead of better. Okay, I feel like I did not stop talking for that entire time, but I really think this is important. And I actually have a whole more list of these because I think it is a really important thing for parents to bring awareness to. And no one really teaches you this. No one really teaches you what kids are capable of. And I feel like all we say is kids are resilient, kids are capable, and all these things. And yet in the same vein, we also need to recognize their limitations, and setting them up for success means small steps towards our goal instead of large leaps that they can't fill. I hope this episode was really helpful for you. I hope that if you are struggling with this, if this resonated with you, if you feel like you need more help with your picky eater, if you are tired of things getting worse instead of better, I highly recommend, if you have not yet already, take my training. I'm going to link it down in the show notes below. I'm giving it to you completely for free. In 42 minutes, you learn my entire proven method to reverse picky eating. I use a root cause approach. It's going to be so helpful for you to understand what your kid is going through. Like if you had any aha moments of like putting yourself in your kid's shoes, you're going to see that in this training as well, to understand how they're experiencing food, how they're experiencing the table, how you're experiencing the table, how your energy is affecting things, and how you can best show up for your kid to set them up for success to eat new foods. I know that it is worth your time. So if you haven't done that yet, I will link it in the show notes below, and I will see you next week for a brand new episode. See you then. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you're walking away with some tangible ways to bring peace to your mealtimes. And if you like this episode, please subscribe and tell all your mom friends. And as always, the best compliment you can give me is leaving a rating and written review, which also helps other mamas like you find this podcast too. You can find more from me on Instagram at Nutrition for Littles. Do you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast? Email me at Alyssa@nutritionforlittles.com. All right, until next time, mamas.